Hello and welcome to this Microsoft TechNet session on Exchange 2007. My name is Robin McManus. Let's start the session by going into more detail on what we'll be covering. In this session, we'll talk about Microsoft Exchange 2007. Exchange 2007 is intended to run alongside Microsoft Office 2007. We'll also be discussing how Exchange gives administrators more controls and provides anywhere access to your inbox. Then, we'll take a look at the built-in security and protection mechanisms that Exchange provides. We'll cover a number of interesting demonstrations, including an introduction to use Exchange Management Console. This improved GUI management tool is simpler for you to use and quicker to navigate. A great improvement on the System Manager in Exchange Server 2003. We'll also take a good look at the Exchange Management Shell. This new administrative interface provides a rich command line experience for you, and in the demo, we'll see how to retrieve and configure information about multiple mailboxes in a single step. Exchange 2007 was designed with some input from the Outlook client team, and, as such, has some significant client-side improvements that we'll be looking at in this session. There's a good demonstration that will cover some of these improvements, such as the calendar concierge, unified messaging, and other more generalized improvements. In the last demonstration of the session, we'll look at how you set up a transport rule to blind copy all messages that are in transit through the organization. As with most TechNet sessions, some prior experience of Microsoft technologies or similar technologies is always helpful. Next is a brief overview of what would be helpful, but not essential, as for this session. As we go through today's session, you will hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology. While we will explain all new terms related to today's session, there are some general terms from the industry or from other versions of Microsoft products that we may not spend time on. To help you out, we have listed the areas that it may be helpful to be familiar with, either prior to the session or to reference afterwards. It would be helpful to have some IT administration experience with Microsoft Exchange Server 2003, Exchange 2000 Server, or Exchange Server 5.5. To cover the topics mentioned and keep the session flow going, we have divided the session up into the following agenda items. Exchange Server gives you more administrative control from role-based installation to improved management tools like the Shell and the Exchange Management Console. In this part of the session, we'll take a look at how Exchange Server gives you more control. We'll look at role-based server deployment, the 64-bit imperative, the Exchange Management Shell and Console, and client auto discovery. Client-side improvements mean that Exchange 2007 gives you anywhere access to your inbox. And during this part of the session, we'll take a look at how. We'll cover Outlook web access improvements with a nice demo on a lot of new features. We'll also discuss unified messaging. In the final part of the session, we'll take a look at how Exchange Server 2007 protects your organization from external and internal security threats and makes your organization more secure. In this section, we'll cover antivirus and anti-spam tools, hosted service, and transport agents and rules. We'll run through a demonstration on how to establish a transport rule. Before we get started with the main presentation, let's run through an Exchange Server roadmap. At the end of 2005, the Exchange product group at Microsoft released Exchange 2003 Service Pack 2, with a focus on anti-spam, mobility, public folder administration, and offline address book improvements, with Outlook Service Pack 2 for cache mode customers, and they raised 16GB store limits to 75GB on the standard edition. EXBPA, the best practice analyzer, is a great tool for analyzing the configuration for customers' environment. It will continue to be improved and then will be expanded to include a mail flow analyzer, a disaster recovery tool, and a performance analyzer. Microsoft acquired FrontBridge, a company that provided hosted messaging servers and has just launched a hosted solution called Microsoft Exchange Hosted Services. Microsoft also acquired the Sabari company, which offers antivirus protection for Exchange Server. As you can imagine, the Exchange product group had a busy year, putting this all together, and has culminated with the release of Exchange Server 2007 Beta 1 in December. Beta 2 shipped mid-year in July 2006. The Exchange product group plans to finish Exchange 2007 by the end of this year, for early release next year, and that's the overall Exchange schedule and roadmap. The goal with Exchange 2007 was to deliver on three themes. These themes were chosen back in 2003, and they have stayed quite constant during the course of the last 2.5 years since Exchange 2003 shipped. The session provides an overview on all three themes, but it's worth noting that anywhere access is covered in TechNext session IT Pro EXC 101, control is covered in session IT Pro EXC 102, and protection is covered in session IT Pro EXC 103. The first theme focuses on making sure that IT professionals, you, get what you need. You say that email is the most important application in your organization, and without it you face big problems. You say that current systems are far too complex and expensive to maintain, and that many of the day-to-day tasks you perform would be better suited to scripted automation, rather than tedious manual configuration. Exchange 2007 is all about giving you that control. Information workers say they need access not just to email, but also to voicemail and faxes. They don't want to be tied to their desks either. Mobile devices are being widely adopted for good reason. People are mobile. Users want anywhere access to all sorts of messaging data. Finally, users say that setting up a meeting and choosing a room to hold it in can be frustrating. Trying to tie everyone's schedules together can waste a lot of time. Exchange 2007 aims to make things easier for the information worker. And finally, email needs to be secure. For most of you out there, this is your top concern. Removing spam and viruses to provide a clean message stream needs to be a core design goal for any message system these days, and it's one that Exchange 2007 certainly provides. In addition, you want to be in control of the messaging environment to the extent that you can conform to legal and corporate-wide policies that require you to journal, archive, and search through messages, and this needs to be easy. When Exchange 2007 was being designed, these three themes were kept to the fore, ensuring that Exchange would provide the message system you need. We will touch on each of these elements in this presentation. Let's return to the agenda. Exchange Server gives you more administrative control, from role-based installation to improved management tools, like the shell and the Exchange Management Console. In this part of the session, we'll take a look on how Exchange Server gives you more control. We'll cover server roles, an overview of the enterprise technology, and two demonstrations, one of the shell and the other using the console. We'll discuss the decision to go for a 64-bit Exchange platform and the benefits resulting from that decision. Then we'll wrap up with an overview of Client Autodiscover. Let's take a look on how Exchange Server gives you more control. Exchange Server has never really been that focused on specific server roles. When you deployed an Exchange Server, it came complete with a transport engine, an information store, with both public and private stores, and also supported different client connection protocols, including HTTP, POP, and IMAP. Many customers configured their servers so they performed only certain functions, such as inbound SMTP relays or HTTP front-end servers or dedicated public folder servers, but all other functionality was still there. When Exchange 2007 was being designed, this monolithic approach was revised, and specific server roles were defined. These roles can be combined on a single server installations, or they can be assigned to separate server computers, depending on what you need. This makes the task of deploying servers simpler. You decide what you need a given server to do, and then deploy just that role. For example, if you want to support client access using HTTP, then deploy a client access server. We'll discuss the server role in more detail next. Exchange System Manager was originally designed for Exchange 4. In the 10 years since it was devised, messaging systems have grown significantly. The Exchange Management Console is a complete rewrite of the GUI interface, with objects grouped logically and with a simplified hierarchy. It's much easier for you to locate an object you want to configure, and then there were some well-conceived wizards that help you perform the management tasks you need. Our first demonstration will focus on this new console. Like most administrators, you probably spent more than your fair share of time adding mailboxes for new user accounts. It's a pretty tedious process. Maybe you've invested some time in creating Visual Basic scripts or got handy with the CSVDE utility. They certainly help, but with the addition of the Exchange Management Shell to Exchange 2007, those tedious tasks just got a lot less tedious. Our second demonstration will take a look at the shell, which is based on Windows Monad technology. It's a simple verb-noun syntax with an intuitive feel. It will be no time before you abandon the GUI for good. Another major architectural change that we'll be discussing later is the shift to a true 64-bit environment. Previous versions of Exchange may have supported 64-bit processors, but they were still 32-bit applications. Exchange 2007 is a 64-bit messaging platform, and this significant change will ensure that your Exchange servers can support larger stores, with more messages and more users. The extra memory that 64-bit systems are capable of addressing is put to good use, the servers running faster. Exchange 2007 just got more reliable with both local continuous replication, LCR, and clustered continuous replication, CCR. With LCR, a duplicate of a storage group is kept synchronized on the local computer and can be used in the event of a problem with the primary storage group. It's quicker to recover from a failure using an LCR copy than using a recovery storage group or resorting to backup media. In addition, CCR allows you to create a duplicate storage group on another server. Kept synchronized with lob shipping, it is far easier to establish the cluster to support CCR than it ever was with Exchange Server 2003. And the hardware requirements are much less stringent because there is no need for shared hardware between the nodes. We'll take a more detailed look at this shortly. Autodiscover means never having to configure an Outlook client again. All a user needs to do is enter his or her email address when setting up the Outlook profile, and Autodiscover determines where the mailbox is and completes the process. Setting up the client side of RPC over HTTP is not that easy, but now the user just enters a standard and simple URL, and the configuration is pulled down from the client computer. This is going to make your life easier, as problems with the initial client configuration is the number one problem received on messaging help desks. Let's focus for a moment on these server roles. There are basically two types of server roles. One designed to be deployed on the perimeter network outside the corporate intranet with no access to Active Directory, and a group of server roles designed to be installed inside the intranet with access to Active Directory. The server in the perimeter network, called an edge transport server, is isolated from Active Directory and functions as a message hygiene and routing engine. It's responsible for filtering your messages as they arrive from untrusted networks, like the internet. Although it's not part of your Active Directory forest, to ensure that it can deliver messages to the correct recipient, it needs access to Active Directory information, which is provided by an instance of ADAM, installed locally and synchronized with an instance within your intranet. This role can't be combined with others, as that would compromise security to some extent. Connectors are used to route messages to and from the intranet. Message routing within the intranet or between trusted organizations is handled by the hub transport server. This role can be combined with others when required. The client access server role enables non-MAPI clients like POP, IMAP, and Outlook Anywhere to connect to Exchange. It functions like a front-end server does since 2003, without all the mailbox and routing elements to slow things down. The mailbox server is more like the traditional Exchange server that we saw in 2003, with an information store and associated public and private stores. However, it doesn't handle non-MAPI client access for all message routing, as this is handled by the other roles. By breaking down a single server into distinct functional units, storage, routing and access, the system works better, with the server able to focus on the given task. The unified messaging server is all new and lets you combine email with both voicemail and fax services. When you install a unified messaging server, you give your users a unified inbox. It links your PBX system with Exchange and handles voice calls and provides answering services as well as voicemail. Now let's look how you might combine these roles to support your organization. Okay, let's put the whole thing together and step through the roles one at a time. Let's think about a message that arrives in your organization. The Edge Transport Server sits isolated in the perimeter network, routing messages to and from the internet. Messages are filtered using agents, like the Connection Filtering Agent, which accepts or rejects SMTP connections from most hosts based on IP addresses. Messages are also filtered based on sender, sender reputation, recipient address, and content. You can also combine third-party antivirus and anti-spam solutions on the Edge Transport Server to provide a clean message stream into your organization. Smaller organizations may not implement Edge servers, preferring instead to use a hosted solution. We'll discuss Microsoft Exchange hosted services in more detail later. Once the message is deemed safe, the Edge passes it along to the Hub Transport Server. Connectors are defined at both the Edge Transport and the Hub Transport Servers to route messages from the perimeter network into your intranet. Connectors are defined in pairs. For example, a send connector at the hub has a corresponding receive connector at the edge. Communication between the edge and hub are secure and authenticated by default. On arrival at the hub transport server, transport rules are applied to further filter the message, consisting of conditions, actions, and exceptions. These rules enable you to create an ethical firewall that ensures inappropriate content does not enter or leave your organization. You can also use transport rules to maintain regulatory conformance. Legal regulations require that you store messages for search and retrieval on demand by the relevant government agency. You may also have your own internal regulations that require disclaimers to be attached to all messages. The transport agents provided in Exchange, running on the Edge and Hub servers, allow you to easily conform to these regulations. You need to install at least one Hub server in each Active Directory site that contains mailbox servers. The Hub transport server now passes a message to the relevant mailbox server. If the user is currently connected to the mailbox server from an MAPI client, such as Microsoft Outlook 2007, he or she is notified about the arrival of the new message. If the user is connected through an Exchange ActiveSync or OWA Outlook Anywhere, formerly known as RPC over HTTP, then the client access server is responsible for notifying the user. The message is retrieved by the remote client. The client access server can also ensure that remote users connect to a suitable client access server, one that is in the same site as their mailbox server. This can take the form of either a redirection, that is telling the client which server to use, or proxying. You will also need one client access server in each Active Directory site that contains a mailbox server. Finally, the new Unified Messaging Server can link your PBX with your email. If a user is available, calls will be routed to telephones and faxes to fax machines. If the user is unavailable, an email message with the attached voice message will be placed in his or her mailbox. Outlook, OWA and EAS clients provide in-message controls to hear and respond to those voice messages. We'll look at unified messaging in the next section. Let's look at the first demonstration using the Exchange Management Console. We'll use the Exchange Management Console to make some fairly simple changes to mailbox objects, in this instance, changing telephone numbers. As you will see, it's all fairly straightforward and all wizard-driven. In this demonstration, we're going to look at the Exchange Management Console. Those of you familiar with 2003 System Manager will notice this simplified interface. On the left, the console tree divides the Exchange organization into work centers, organization, servers, recipients, and toolbox. The toolbox work center contains 8 tools for performance, recovery, and best practice. You can also start the queue viewer here. In older versions of System Manager, you had to drill down multiple layers and locate a specific server to view the message queues. Next, we'll look at the Organization Configuration Work Center. If we click the Organization Configuration Work Center itself, in the Results pane, you can view delegate information. If we expand the Work Center, you can access organization-wide settings related to the various server roles, for example, the Hub Transport role. We can view the current settings. For example, you can view any existing transport rules. As there are none at present, we can use the Action pane link to create a transport rule. All actions in the console are wizard-driven. We'll just cancel this wizard for now, and we'll revisit transport rules later. The mailbox object allows us to manage email lifecycle folders. In the Work pane, we can select any email lifecycle folder and view its properties. None have been defined yet. In the Action pane, we can create folders. We're not creating any managed folders at this stage, so we'll just click Cancel. You can also manage unified messaging from this Work Center, including setting up both dial plans and UPIP gateways from here. You must configure some unified messaging elements using the shell, which we'll look at in a moment. Let's look at the Server Configuration Work Center. If you look in the Results pane, you can see all the servers listed within the Northwind Traders organization. There is only one server at present. The SMB EX01 server has 3 roles installed. If you right-click this server, you can select any of these roles to manage. If you look at the mailbox role, you can see that when you view servers that host the mailbox role, you can view the storage groups and stores that they host. It's easy to configure a store. If you open the mailbox database and look at the properties, you'll see that they're similar to what you'll find with System Manager in Exchange 2003. Now let's look at the Recipient Configuration Work Center. Notice that you can sort recipients, for example, by SMP address. OK, let's look at the mailbox. If you click the Address and Phone tab, you can update the user's business phone number easily. The Exchange Management Console is much simpler to use, and things are grouped logically. Most tasks are wizard-driven and intuitive, but the console isn't very useful for performing bulk administrative tasks. For example, if you wanted to change the telephone numbers of everyone in the organisation, that would be a lot of mouse clicks. And what about only changing mailboxes that met certain criteria? This would be a very boring process if you had to do it manually. The Exchange Management Shell is better suited to these repetitive or bulk administrative tasks. After a quick intro to the shell and using monad commands, in this second demo we'll contrast the Exchange Management Console with the shell by performing the same edits to mailboxes as in the last demo. But this time using the simple monad command, we'll take that a little further and make changes to selected objects using a slightly more complex command. Now let's look at the shell. Some of you may be more comfortable with using the GUI to manage objects, like users and mailboxes. The Exchange Management Console still gives you that ability, but it's not the best tool for repetitive tasks or for tasks that you need to run against loads of objects. As you start to work with the shell, you'll see how powerful and intuitive it really is, and you'll find yourself dropping to the command line more often. We'll open the shell and enter a simple command. You'll hear the term command let being used, which is the same thing as a command. The first thing you'll notice is the syntax is verb, noun, based. We ask the shell to get, that's the verb, all the Exchange servers, that's the noun. You must use a hyphen to separate the verb and noun. Nouns are always singular, that is, you wouldn't say get Exchange servers, you would say get Exchange server, even if you have many servers. For example, if we want a list of mailboxes, we enter get mailbox. If you want a list of valid commands, just enter get ex command. You might want to output that to a file, unless you can read quickly. That's easy too. Just enter the same command and then output the results to a text file. To view the file we just created, use Notepad. You notice that the shell accepts regular command prompt commands. It does that by using aliases that you can establish for commonly used commands. Already built into the shell are several aliases that perform standard command prompt functions, such as changing directory, deleting files, and so on. We'll close that file for now. Finally, we'll see how you can pass the result of one command to another command to process further, which is known as pipelining. Enter a simple command, in this case to display the list of users. Now let's ask it to return a list of users with names beginning with J. We do that by entering the getUser command, as before, but then pipelining the complete list of users to the second element of the command, the where object command. This will create a subset of the users that match the criteria we enter in the squiggly brackets. In this case, a name that is like J and anything. In other words, that starts with a J. By the way, the $_.name means this object's name. The where object command goes through all the objects and checks each one's name against the criteria we defined. There are a number of operators that you can use to build powerful commands. You can see how powerful the shell is, especially when performing tasks on large numbers of objects. It's also easy to get up to speed quickly because the command syntax is user-friendly and intuitive. Let's try using the shell to change something. We saw how easy it was to change a single telephone number using the console. Let's see how quickly we can change the telephone number for all users. We'll use that pipeline again and use the setUser command to change the phone property for all users. Let's see if that worked. If you switch to the console and open up a mailbox, you should see the change we just made. That was very simple and very quick. Let's try a more selective approach. We'll enter a command that builds on the three things we tried so far: a get, a filter, and a set. Now, let's execute that. The command we executed didn't return any output, so let's check if it worked. We'll switch to the console and open up Hollis account. It worked perfectly. We don't need to keep switching to the console to verify things. We can also use the shell. We'll enter a command to display everyone's phone number next to their names. That was pretty easy too. We've seen that the shell is ideally suited to perform your day-to-day management tasks. Now let's take a look at the 64-bit imperative. Some of you may be wondering why Exchange Server 2007 requires 64-bit hardware and a 64-bit operating system. Well, the developers in the product group decided that the 32-bit platform was beginning to constrain what could be done in Exchange, mostly as it pertained to capacity and performance. Most of us are buying 64-bit hardware today, but still using 32-bit applications. To a large extent, that's probably because there are few 64-bit applications available. But whatever the reasons, by doing so, we constrain our hardware. Once able to utilize the 64-bit platform properly. If you think about servers that were installed several years ago, maybe with as much as 4 gigabytes of memory, well, they now expect to support more users and probably with bigger mailboxes. So those older servers are struggling with the new demands for storage, reliability and security. By shifting to a 64-bit operating system and application, Exchange has a better stability and more room for maneuvering. More memory means that we can support more users and mailboxes. It also means we can allocate more memory to cache. The larger cache sizes possible with the 64-bit platform will also boost performance. It shouldn't be a big deal, as most of us have been investing in 64-bit hardware for a few years. It's just that we need to get the best from those systems, and upgrading both the operating system and the application will enable that. Let's focus on the storage benefits that change to a 64-bit application will bring. Many Microsoft customers have Exchange servers with large disks, but they're only using a small fraction of that capacity. This is because a server can't support the numbers of users or the size of the mailbox that would consume the available space. In effect, disk space is going to waste. And disks can't go much faster. The spindle can only spin so fast. There needs to be a way to allow Exchange to perform well enough so that it can handle more users, use that wasted space, and not bottleneck at any physical disk. By adding more memory and growing the cache, it reduces the I/O per disk, allowing each disk to support more users faster. This means the space wasted is reduced and the server runs quicker. The difference between taking cache from 200 megabytes to, say, 1 gigabyte, 2 gigabyte or 4 gigabyte reduces the I/O throughput requirements on a system by more than 70%. What that means is that you can support more and larger mailboxes. But the benefit of a 64-bit really depends on how your disks are configured for Exchange. For many of you, you will need 1/4 of the disks, or you can put 4 times as many users on the same number of disks, or you can give users 4 times the disk space for their mailbox, whatever suits you best. When you consider that most of the capital investment in Exchange services on storage, it makes sense to utilize the existing server and storage by switching to Exchange 2007, rather than replacing the server hardware and storage. Now, I/O throughput is only one piece of the puzzle. If you have clever storage, you need a clever way to back up this storage and a better way to maintain the high availability of storage. And that's the way log shipping has been introduced in Exchange 2007. As many of you are aware, transaction log files are used in Exchange Server to hold changes that are about to be made to the database in a given storage group. These logs contain a record of all changes made to the database since the last normal backup. If you take a copy of a storage group, all that's needed to synchronize the database it contains with the live system is to replay the log files against the copy. That is the base of both LCR and CCR. As you are also probably aware, performing a restore operation is time-consuming, and if we can reduce the situation where we need to perform them, that's got to be a good thing. The Exchange product group looked at the information about when and why restores were being done, and they discovered that the most common reason for performing a restore was disk drive failure. All bearings in a disk drive wear out every couple of years, and people have to look to backup to recover. Log shipping is a great way to get around that because it's a continuous replication. Each log file is played back against a duplicate storage group's database, so you can have a live copy of the database available in case a disk drive fails. In some ways, LCR is like a mirror of a database stored locally. However, there are situations where other failures can cause the database to become unavailable. If your server power supply goes out, having a local copy of the database won't help. Clustered continuous replication was designed for two computers to support a complete server failure and therefore address this problem. You create a copy of the database on another computer and log shipping keeps them synchronized. It's been designed so those servers can be in two different physical sites, geographically separate if you want, to have insurance against site failure. All this is built into Exchange 2007. A side benefit of having multiple copies of a database at all times is that when you do perform backup operations, you can do this on a standby database, which will reduce the performance impact on your users. And although LCR and CCR reduce the likelihood of having to resort to a restore operation after a disk failure, they also reduce the number of backups that you need to perform. Of course, having a second copy of a database doesn't protect you from accidentally deleting something, since the deletion will be duplicated on the replica. The other major reason for performing a restore is when the users have deleted information. The dumpster interfill was 3 days in 2003. That's now been increased to 14 days. This should allow users to recover their information without you having to restore the whole database and then merging mailboxes across. Let's have a look at another major administrative task, configuring client computers. The number one help desk cost for many customers today is dealing with users who are installing Outlook and don't know the name of their mail server. Exchange solves this problem with a simple thing that has a dramatic impact, auto-discovery. If you're on the corporate intranet connected to Active Directory when a user starts Outlook, it will automatically get the settings required to configure Outlook successfully for Active Directory. Alternatively, if you are outside the corporate intranet but you know your email address, the client devices knows how to compute the URL that is offered from the Exchange client access server and will download all the settings the client needs to connect to the Exchange server. This XML file has absolutely everything the system needs, from security settings, RPC over HTTP settings, mailbox server, everything. And it works for mobile devices too, so the only thing anyone will ever type in a mobile device is their email address. Once. And that's the entire mobile experience will be set up. It's scalable, easy provisioning experience, and has potentially large savings for Exchange administrators. Let's take another look at the agenda. That concludes the section on control. We'll look at anywhere access in the next section. We'll talk about client-side improvements in Exchange 2007. We'll also look at the unified messaging service. We'll have a demonstration on the improvements made to OWA, including the calendar concierge. Let's take a look at what end users will experience with Exchange 2007. Outlook Web Access is a terrific client and is being overhauled in Exchange 2007 to match the Outlook 2007 user experience. In the demonstration, you'll see how the user interface has improved greatly over what we had in 2003. Exchange Server brings some really significant improvements that refresh the calendar in OWA. These changes include explicit resource schema, so that managing conference rooms or resource is explicit, and the policies can be set on those resources that change how calendar invite process. Now all processes sit on the server, so all clients see an updated and consistent view on the calendar. Free, busy information now comes directly from the calendar, so it's always up to date when you're scheduling a new meeting with someone. Outlook 2007 will have a scheduling assistant built in, which helps find optimal times to have meetings. Microsoft has worked hard to make this reliable and efficient when scheduling meetings and managing the resources associated with them. The significant hassle for information workers working at home is when they get a link for email, they click it and it doesn't work. The Exchange development team wanted the links to work, and with SharePoint document access, they do, without the need for a VPN. Unified messaging combines the traditional elements of your mailbox, such as email and calendar items, with voicemail and faxes, providing a single location for all your messages. The benefits are clear. With in-message controls, you can listen and respond to your voicemails without needing additional software. It's all there in your inbox. Here you can see a few of the key features of OWA. Autocomplete. Just like Outlook, OWA has an autocomplete for email addresses. Search. Search functionality is vastly improved in OWA and is equivalent to that in Outlook 2007. Conversation view. You can now organize your messages by conversation in OWA. Notifications. OWA has more features to help you work smarter. Address book functionality has been radically overhauled with Exchange 2007 version of OWA. Compare the basic address book functionality in Exchange 2003 to the feature-rich version Exchange 2007. You'll have difficulty believing that this is a web browser. Booking meetings with colleagues is now easier than ever. Outlook is more than just email. Calendaring and booking meetings plays a key part in the Outlook experience. We'll look at calendaring in more detail during the demonstration, but first we'll explore the rich interface in OWA used to book meetings. Now let's look at the document access. Another major feature in Exchange 2007 is document access. Imagine you receive an email and you're reading it with OWA. The message is from someone in your team and tells you that a document is on the SharePoint site, ready for you to review. The problem is it's 8 o'clock PM. You're at home and you're supposed to review it for a meeting early tomorrow morning. Without document access, you will have to set up a VPN to work to access that SharePoint site. With document access, Exchange will proxy that document from SharePoint or a Windows file share on your behalf. It only supports read-only access, but gives you the access to those documents directly within OWA without having to expose the entire SharePoint site on the internet. There are a number of security settings and features here. You can have on-off switch per user, you can have an on-off switch per virtual directory, and you can also set it that if the user is connected from a public computer, the document access feature is disabled. There's also allow-deny lists that you can implement. Let's run through a demo of some of these things now. In this third demonstration, we'll take a look at the benefits offered by Exchange 2007 to end users. We'll take a particular look at the calendaring concierge, which helps you with the process of scheduling meetings. Outlook Web Access has retained the Outlook 2003 look and feel so that it will be comfortable for a user who switches to OWA from Outlook. In the 2007 version, the designers have added some new touches to make this a better application, using some of the newer, more modern web techniques. The main design principle for OWA was that users shouldn't have to compromise on experience just because they were using a browser. By the time we reach the end of this demo, you'll see that this has been achieved. If you open this sample email from Katie Jordan, the first thing you'll notice is that it has a chart embedded in it. Let's say we want to forward this to Peter Houston, or our PR manager. We click forward and OWA opens a composed message. One of the things you've always had in Outlook, but not in Outlook Web Access, is autocomplete. As we start typing Peter, if we press Ctrl plus K, OWA completes the rest of the name for me. On future messages, it will remember Peter and autocomplete his name as we type. Let's say we want to send a copy of the report to Peter's boss, the marketing director. Another great improvement is the Office Outlook Web Access 2007 address book. If you click the CC button, you'll see the new address book. In previous versions of the Office Outlook Web Access, you didn't see a list of potential recipients, but you could only search for recipients. Now you can actually browse the global address list. In the center pane, you'll see a list of all the people who are in the global address list. You can also search for people directly from the address book user interface. The availability section calls the availability service for that person and gives us a free, busy information about that person for the next week or two, and displays along with their office address, or in this case, Holly's phone number. The organisation tab provides a quick view of a person's peers, his or her reports, his or her managers, all the way up to the top. Of course, each of these items is clickable, and it will open in a new window. We can double-click Holly Holt in the address book to add her to the message recipients, and then go ahead and send the message. Now we'll look at how to search messages. Let's say someone has sent us something about up-and-coming system maintenance on the SharePoint server. If we wanted to see all the messages in our mailbox regarding SharePoint, we could use the new search dialog box. Type SharePoint and then click search. You can see in real time just how quick the search is. The search has found various items. The second item is one with a link to the SharePoint workspace. The next few lines are from the company IT director, providing a technical overview of the new systems that his department is building on the company's SharePoint server. When we've completed the search, we can click clear to return to the inbox. This has taken advantage of the new search capability that's coming with Exchange 2007 that makes full text content indexing much faster than it has been in the past. It boosts performance while simultaneously reducing the amount of system resources required. Search will be in the same place in Outlook Web Access as in Outlook 2007. In our sample inbox, we have several emails with varying subject lines regarding the Contoso Hotels opportunity, and it's somewhat confusing. Let's say we've read some of them, but not others, and we're not really sure where we are in the process. In OWA, we can now use the conversation view, which you may recognise from Outlook. If we go to Arrange by Conversation, we can see that it arranges the messages based on conversation. We can see who has responded to whom. If there's a different thread, OWA will handle the indentation of that correctly. We just click Read Those Messages. Now let's take a look at the meeting request from a colleague, Claire O'Donnell. If you click it, you can see something new in the preview pane, new inline disposition buttons. You can accept, tentatively accept, or decline a meeting request right from the preview pane. If you click the little drop-down arrow on the accept or decline buttons, you can choose whether you're going to edit, send, or not send your reply right from the main Outlook Web Access page. We want to go to the conference, so we'll click accept, and then choose to send the response to Claire right away. Let's look at the meeting a little more. Let's say you wanted to book a meeting for the entire team. In Outlook Web Access at the moment, it can be difficult to find a time when all the attendees are available for a particular meeting. Exchange 2007 introduces a new set of calendaring features. Let's look at one of them for now. We'll click New Meeting Request and use the autocomplete feature to put everybody on it. Remember to include a subject and allocation so that everyone knows where the meeting is. If you click the Scheduling Assistant tab, you see that it's changed significantly from OWA 2003. In addition, it's now the same in both Outlook Web Access 2007 and Outlook 2007. In the past, if you wanted to find time when everybody was available, you had to use the AutoPick feature. Even then, it would only find the first time slot when all the people were available. However, there may be more than one day where everyone is available. You now have the Suggested Times box in OWA. This checks the availability for each of these people for the next couple of weeks and finds days that are better or worse. There's even a key for great, good and poor, so you can pick a date where that's good for everyone. It's worth mentioning the Show Only Working Hours feature. This only shows the working hours for each person. OWA will not show anyone as available outside these hours. We'll send the meeting request, then it's back to the presentation. Let's switch back to Outlook Web Access for a brief demo of the Out of Office feature. Click the Options menu and click Out of Office Assistant. This is similar to what you'll see in Outlook 2007 Office Assistant as well. You can now configure the Out of Office Assistant to start and end at a particular time. This is something that many users have asked for. In addition, you can now have HTML Out of Office messages, no longer just plain text. You can even have a separate out-of-office message for external senders. You might choose to send messages that just notify those particular users they're not going to get a response from you right away. You can choose to send this to external senders from your contact list, or you can send it to all external senders. Click Save. Your out-of-office's reply is all set up. These same out-of-office improvements are also available in Outlook 2007. There are even more new features in OWA, but let's just touch on unified messaging before we return to the agenda. The Exchange product group designed the unified messaging server role to unify mailboxes and to integrate the traditional items found in a mailbox, such as emails and calendar items, with faxes and voice messages. They also sought to simplify administrative tasks by consolidating the infrastructure required to support both emails and telephony in a single unified system. The unified messaging server consists of several components. First, the automated attendant, which functions as an automated telephone answering service. When you call Microsoft, you'll hear the auto attendant working. It's configured to use voice recognition, then access the global address list to route calls to the appropriate person or department. It's expensive to employ receptionists, and this facility could offer your company some real cost savings. Although it's configured to use voice recognition at Microsoft, you can also use voice prompts such as press 7 for sales, and so forth. Second, call answering, where your unanswered calls get routed as email to your mailbox. If you are available, the call will be routed by the UM server to your extension. But if you're not, then you'll receive an email with the voice message attached. What's more, you can access this voice message from a variety of different clients, such as OWA, EAS, and Outlook. Third, the fax receiving service will route faxes based on your instructions. If you have a single fax number for your organization, faxes will be routed to a single mailbox for onward distribution. If you have a telephone number and a fax number, faxes are routed straight to your own inbox. Finally, if you have a single number for faxes and telephone calls, if you answer incoming fax call, then you can use the Outlook voice access to route it to a fax machine. Or if you don't answer the call, the UM server routes the fax to your mailbox automatically. Last, Outlook voice access, which enables you to access your mailbox items from a phone. As with other voice access systems, you can press 7 to delete, 3 to read again, and so on. What's really great here is you can use voice recognition to instruct the system to clear a calendar, read a next message, add a contact, and so on. That's all in Exchange 2007 Unified Messaging, some great end-user features with some major cost savings for administrators. Let's move on to a discussion of some of the security features in Exchange Server 2007. In the third part of the session, we'll look at the security features built into Exchange 2007 and how it can help ensure that your messaging environment is secure. We'll cover antivirus and anti-spam features, hosted Exchange services, and transport and storage rules, and also take a look at configuring a transport rule in our last demonstration. The Exchange product group has been working with the leading players in the antivirus market, McAfee, Trend, and others, making sure that Exchange 2007 will work well with their products. With the acquisition by Microsoft of Sabari late last year, it is possible that Microsoft will include the Sabari antivirus on the Exchange 2007 product CD. The Exchange product group is committed to a complete anti-spam solution in Exchange 2007. To some extent, that exists in 2003 today, but there are a number of things that can be improved, like automatic update of the filters. Technology has been added to dynamically examine the message flow and look for messages that look like spam before the filter gets updated. The option to quarantine messages rather than just delete them has also been added. Outlook user safe lists have been added at the edge of the organization, on the edge transport server role. Users will often add originators to their safe list or trusted user list, but the spam filter at the server still deletes their messages. Now, every user safe list is applied at the edge of the organization, which is secure and compact, so email from people on their safe list should be received. By default, Exchange Server 2007 authenticates and encrypts all messages sent between recipients in the same organization. Exchange Server uses Kerberos and Transport Layer Security, TLS, to provide the authentication and encryption. Inter-organization messages fall into two categories, business-to-business and ad hoc. Business-to-business messages are between organizations that regularly communicate. These might be customers or suppliers. When you define a business-to-business relationship, you can create a secure communication channel with the organization. Ad hoc messages are between organizations that communicate less often but still would prefer secure communications. You can define these relationships on the transport servers. Inter-organization messages require certificate-based authentication and TLS encryption. You can define transport rules that determine how Exchange Server will route a message. The Hub Transport Server role handles message routing within your organization or between trusted organizations. Policy-based routing allows for the establishment of an ethical firewall that ensures that inappropriate content never enters or leaves your organization. There are three types of transport rules. Internal rules affect intra-organization messages only. External rules affect messages that enter or leave the organization. Global rules affect all messages in transit through an organization, whether internal or external. Rules define what messages to intercept, conditions, what action to take on those messages, actions, and any messages to ignore, exceptions. For example, you can define a global transport rule that intercepts a message with a specific content and blind copies it to a specific recipient unless your information technology, IT department, sent it. We'll take a look at this during the demonstration. The two server roles that handle message routing are the Edge Transport Server role and the Hub Transport Server role. As we've seen, you install the Edge Transport Server role on a server computer that is not a member of a domain. In addition, you situate the Edge Transport Server in your perimeter network. By installing an Edge Transport Server, you separate the internal and external routing functions and you ensure message hygiene and security through the filtering that you define at the Edge Transport Server. Viruses and spam pose a significant risk to the availability of messaging systems. You can define message filters at both the Edge and the Hub Transport Servers. These filters examine messages, determine whether they pose a security threat, and take the appropriate action. Recent accounting scandals have forced governments to create laws that require companies to retain email messages for specified periods and to produce these messages upon request. Some legislation requires that you keep the message metadata easily accessible and provide a mechanism for easy search and retrieval of messages upon request. Outside the legal requirements, your organization may want to screen email messages to ensure that they do not contain inappropriate content. You may also want to add legal disclaimers, or you may decide that certain messages require an intellectual property disclosure. Agents filter messages in transit. The following agents are provided for filtering. The Bridgehead Mail Flow Control Agent, which can reroute, copy or drop messages. The Journaling Agent, which allows you to store a copy of messages while in transit. The Disclaimer Agent, which can be configured to add that disclaimer. The Address Rewrite Agent and the Attachment Filtering Agent, which help control viruses. It's the first two of these that allow you to retain messages and their metadata for retrieval later. You can easily configure them to capture all or some of the messages they transit through the Edge and Hub Transport Servers. While the agents handle messages in transit, the email lifecycle handles messages at rest. That is, messages not currently in transit through your organization. When you implement email lifecycle folders, the mailbox folder is responsible for the archival process. Email lifecycle folders preserve messages for a specified period, delete messages when they are no longer needed, provide improved searches to locate specified messages in a large store, identify non-compliant messages, removes unnecessary data to manage storage more effectively, and make policy enforcement as unobtrusive as possible. It's great to be able to capture and store messages, but without the improved multi-mailbox search facilities in Exchange 2007, it would be hard to find the required message later. Let's look at how to create a transport rule in the last of our demonstrations. In this last demonstration, we'll see how you can create transport rules to enforce regulatory compliance. Now we'll look at how to create a simple transport rule. First, you'll see which transport agents are currently running. You do this from the shell. If you type the simple get transport agent command, you can see that the command returns four items. If you wanted to capture copies of email messages in transit, you can do that by either using the transport agent, which we'll do in a moment, or by using the journal agent. It's more usual to use the journal agent to archive messages in your organization, as a transport agent requires more specific configuration. However, we'll use the transport agent for this demo. First, we create the transport rule. To do this, we go to the Hub Transport Settings in the Organization Configuration Work Center. From the Action pane, we click New Transport Rule, enter an appropriate name here and a valid description. In this case, we want to track all messages that Claire receives, so we'll enter a relevant comment. A transport rule consists of three elements: conditions, which determine which messages are to be trapped, an action, which determines what the agent is to do with the trapped message, and exceptions, those messages that meet the specified conditions of the rule, but we don't want the action performed on. We define the conditions first, in this case by selecting messages sent to people, and then selecting which people, in this case, Claire. Next, we need to define the action. So we'll choose blind copy, and then select Spencer's mailbox as the recipient of the blind copy. We could define exceptions next if necessary, but we don't need any, so we'll continue to create the rule. Now let's test it. We'll open OWA and send a message to Claire. Now, let's switch to OWA as Spencer Lowe and locate that copied message. You can use transport rules to do far more than copy messages for journaling purposes. The journaling agent is probably better suited to that anyway. You can create an ethical firewall that ensures inappropriate content doesn't enter or leave your organisation. With the acquisition of FrontBridge and the launch of Microsoft Exchange Hosted Services, Microsoft can also provide a tightly integrated hosted package for users that want it. This is of special interest to SMEs who want the protection of a clean message stream, the safety of disaster recovery infrastructure, and help with archiving and regulatory compliance, but who perhaps don't have the budget or the IT infrastructure to provide this in-house. However, Hosted Service can handle all of that for you. Exchange Hosted Service consists of four services. Exchange Hosted Filtering provides antivirus and anti-spam filtering, policy enforcement and disaster recovery. Exchange Hosted Archive provides a message archive and search facilities and message continuity for when your own server is down. Exchange Hosted Encryption provides a transparent encryption layer to all messages as they enter and leave your organization. You need to do nothing. All your messages flow to the service gateway through an encrypted tunnel and then onto the intended recipient. The service also provides the recipient with the necessary keys to transparency to decrypt the message. This not only provides security, but also authentication. Last, Exchange Hosted Continuity provides rollback and recovery solutions and message continuity. With the combination of hosted services and Exchange 2007, you can have the best of both worlds. It is important to add up the cost of saving from using Exchange 2007. No matter what is done to improve security and protection, IT pros want to know how they can save money with Exchange 2007. The biggest cost saving comes from the voicemail and corporate address book we discussed earlier. It can be expensive to maintain receptionists and legacy voicemail systems. Exchange 2007 replaces all that. Fewer backups means less cost. LCR, CCR and the dumpster changes removed many of the reasons for daily backups, so weekly backups should be sufficient for most organizations, which leads to a cost savings here too. We're buying bigger, slower disks for Exchange servers, and we're moving from 200 megabyte servers to 2 gigabyte servers based on Exchange 2007, with the I/O optimization, which does away with about 20% of our help desk costs associated with messaging. Client configuration is a number one issue for most help desks. If AutoDiscover removes those issues, you can realize greater savings. Both the Exchange Management Console and the Exchange Management Shell make the job of administrators much easier and less time consuming. Less time spent adding mailboxes, configuring connectors, and so on is money saved. Exchange has supported many, many different APIs in the past. In fact, there are too many of them, and unfortunately, it's just too complicated for people to know which ones they're supposed to use. As a result, the Exchange product group has unified all the store accesses with web services. WebDAV, CDO, and EXOLEDP have all been de-emphasized, which means that they are supported in Exchange Server 2007, but there's no plan to continue support in the future. Developers should start to use web services to replace WebDAV, CDO, or EXOLEDP. The big benefit of using these web services is that Outlook Exchange interoperability is provided via a common Exchange business logic layer. And what the product group has done is to ensure this business logic layer is shared with Exchange Transport, Outlook Web Access, Exchange ActiveSync, and other protocols like POP and IMAP. No client-side runtime code is necessary because it's a web service. There are automated proxies built into the visualstudio.net, so it's very simple to build an application. In this session, we talked about Exchange 2007, how Exchange gives administrators more control, provides anywhere access to inboxes, and provides built-in security with protection mechanisms. We covered a number of demonstrations both in the Exchange Management Console and the Exchange Management Shell. In addition, we looked at the new features in OWA and the exciting new features for end users. Finally, we talked about agents, and we looked about how to set up a transport rule to enable message archiving. For the most comprehensive technical information on Microsoft products, visit the main TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/TechNet. You can also visit the www.microsoft.com/TechNet/ITProExc100 for more information on books, courses, certifications, and other community resources that relate directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available from Microsoft. Microsoft also has instructor-led courses if you prefer the classroom-style environment. Microsoft Learning develops courseware called Microsoft Official Curriculum, MOC, which includes e-learning, Microsoft Pressbooks, workshops, clinic, and Microsoft Skills Assessment, MOC, is offered in an instructor-led environment and offers comprehensive training courses for IT professionals in supporting and implementing solutions using the Microsoft products and technologies. The course that best supports this session is Getting Started with Microsoft Exchange Server 2007 Clinic, which is available now. For more information, please visit www.microsoft.com/learning. There is also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It is an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills in implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The skills assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which includes links to Microsoft official curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Pressbooks, and other Microsoft learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including Security and Patch Management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and all visualstudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In a highly competitive IT job market, how can you differentiate yourself from the next candidate? The Microsoft certification program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the availability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals. It is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. There are a number of accreditations available, starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional, MCP. You can choose to go on to become a fully certified systems administrator, MCSA, or a system engineer, MCSE, or a desktop specialist, MCDST. Away from the infrastructure side, the MCDBA certifications covers SQL Server products. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which I'm sure you'll find interesting to hear about. To help explain this in more detail, I'd like to introduce Carolyn McGrath, IT Professional Marketing Manager, to cover these changes in more detail.
For IT professionals, all the resources in the TechNet program will give you the support you need to be successful with our technology. Whether you are deploying new software, managing a server environment, or troubleshooting, TechNet has a resource for you. Use the web for immediate access to documentation, knowledge base, scripts, downloads, and more. Webcasts and events will give you deep insight into specific technology topics. Keep up to date with technology news using the TechNet Flash. This is a twice-monthly newsletter that you can customize to give you information about the specific technology that interests you. With more time to read, the TechNet magazine is an excellent resource offering in-depth articles written by industry-leading technologists. If you want to ensure that you have all of the essential resources at your fingertips, the TechNet subscription is for you. It includes full version software and betas so that you can evaluate our technology at your own pace. No time bombs, so your product analysis won't time out. It includes two complimentary telephone support incidents. Talk to Microsoft technical professionals to help you with whatever challenges you may encounter with the software. That is $500 worth of value. The TechNet subscription is a great value to all IT professionals. Finally, we have TechNet VLabs. Use this to get your hands on the technology in a hosted environment. You can explore how it works, run different scenarios, and have a full product experience without having to dedicate your time to deploy and manage the hardware to do so yourself. Overall, the TechNet program has all of the resources you need to get the most out of Microsoft technology. TechNet Plus subscription. What is it? Get hands-on experience with the technology through software and betas, including Office, Windows, and servers. Support when you need it, including two free telephone support incidents. Easy access to information via updates, utilities, white papers, knowledge base, and more. Work on your skills at your own pace. E-learning courses and training. The TechNet Plus subscription. That's what it is. Need support? Answers are standing by. You have a choice of three support offerings from Microsoft. Firstly, we have online and self-help. Choose from the TechNet website, the Security Center Online, Knowledge Base, Product Support Centers, the TechNet Script Center, News Groups, User Groups, and the TechNet Plus subscription. Secondly, we have assisted incidents. Assisted incidents include email support, phone support contracts, advisory services. Finally, contract-based support. Contract-based support is offered to organizations and consists of premier support or essential support. Thank you for listening to this TechNet session.